Hello, my name is Luca, and welcome to the very first episode of Sport Within the Mind podcast, where we take a deeper dive into the mental challenges faced within sport to another level.
So today I'm here with James Blenko, who works for the Performance Athlete Support Programme for Sheffield Hallam University, to understand the knowledge and experiences of the talent behind the talent and how athletes are able to balance their professional sporting goals and their studies at university.
Also joining me is Kieran Burke, who is part of the same programme as James but works as a strength and conditioning coordinator. But first, let's start by talking with manager James.
So thanks for giving me your time, James. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Just said to you before the call, a very busy time for us at the minute. We've got a lot from the last academic year that we're looking to really sort of shape up for 24-25, and a lot of improvements and changes to the services that we offer next year. So I'm particularly excited about this period, but really, really busy at the minute.
Sounds good. Firstly, to give a bit of context to the viewers and the people, like, what is the Performance Athlete Support Programme at Hallam and what is your role?
I'm the Performance Sport Manager at Sheffield Hallam University. So I've been in post now for just over 12 months. I support a team of coaches and practitioners who deliver to our performance athletes, and that includes Jess, who is our Performance Coordinator. We then have Kieran Burke, who is Strength and Conditioning Coordinator, as well as a team of, like I say, multidisciplinary coaches in strength and conditioning with Kieran. And that's another Kieran to the Kieran Burt that I mentioned before. We've got Dawn, Paige and Zeynep, who deliver psychology, nutrition and lifestyle support to our athletes individually. And then we have support through our physiotherapy clinic for basically making sure our athletes are not broken during the season. So a lot of support that's offered to our athletes there through a multidisciplinary team during an academic year. So in a bit of a nutshell, that's what the program's there for.
Yeah. So what is the kind of purpose around the program? Like, what's the goal?
Essentially, each individual athlete will have their own support mechanisms behind the scenes, their own coaching staff. Some will already be in receipt of things like strength and conditioning, personalized programming, and again, making sure that they're things like movement competencies and their physical preparation off the track or the field is top notch. Some athletes won't have that, and that's essentially where Sheffield Hallam provides that service where needed. Everything that we offer is opt-in, so the athletes have the ability to use as many or as few of the services as what they require. And we basically try and support the athletes on that journey of trying to achieve their goals, essentially. So a full package of support as rounded as can be, with again providing what as much or as little as needed for each individual.
So how many athletes are actually involved within the program?
So we currently have 60 athletes in total, 30 of which are in receipt of a scholarship. So that includes £1,000 bursary during the academic year and then £500 of claimable expenses. So they can claim back on things like fuel, entry into competitions, transportation, accommodation, etc. The bursary is there purely to support the athletes in their sporting aspirations. We have the full support package available to all 60 of those athletes. It also includes academic flexibility, so essentially making sure that the students that we have at the university can balance their dual career lifestyle with academic focus and also their sporting aspirations as well.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a very, very busy schedule. I mean, I recognise Jade O'Dowda. I think, was she part of the programme? I think she's off to the Olympics. She's a heptathlete.
That's correct. So Jade is due to start competing in the heptathlon event tomorrow morning, which is Thursday the 8th, depending on when you're listening to this. Jade has been represented on the programme for a number of years. I haven't personally had the privilege of meeting Jade, but again, she is enrolled on the program this year and hasn't personally opted into any of the services that we provide, again, other than the receipt of the bursary. But again, there's nothing wrong with that, essentially, if that's all that Jade needs and she's receiving everything that she needs on and off the track outside of Hallam, that's absolutely fine. We wish Jade the very best of luck, and hopefully she's had a really positive journey in the years that she has been supported by the Performance Athlete Support Programme.
What is the lifestyle like for an athlete at the top level? Is it like, do they wake up at 5 a.m.? Is it then doing 3 hours of training, then they're off to a lecture, or how does it kind of balance everything around doing everything?
You think about all the things that an individual student has to balance in terms of the academic lifestyle and potentially having moved to a new city and having to experience new areas of like where to eat, who your friendship group is. There's lots of transitional changes from even coming to university in the first place, as well as then maintaining your athletic lifestyle, the commitments that you have to the sport that you're involved in. All of that can only, well, all of it adds up to basically a burden, something that each athlete has to carry with them, make sure that they're managing their own timetables, what they're eating, and making sure they're getting the right dietary requirements, making sure that they're planning ahead so they know what's coming up, when it's coming up. Again, balancing the academic timetable that they'll have and the amount of contact hours that they'll be with assignments, exam deadlines, as well as competitions, preparation, recovery from injury potentially as well. There's a hell of a lot in there that an athlete has to take on as additional responsibility to your typical everyday student. I know that for me, I had a particularly busy time when I was at university back in 2007, so we're going away back now, but it can't compare really to someone who's at the upper echelons of their particular sport and an elite level. The amount of discipline that's required as part of that is phenomenal, and it's a real credit to our athletes that they're able to balance that dual career approach.
I mean, definitely it does seem very challenging. I think actually a recent example is the long jumper yesterday, the Team GB long jumper Jacob Fincham Dukes. He said actually to the BBC that after he finished fifth, He was like, well, some of these athletes are working nonstop every day, whereas I'm balancing a full-time job and I'm off to work on Friday again. So it kind of just shows, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And again, it's some of that behind the scenes stuff, which people don't really see it through spectating a final at the Olympics. It's all the work that goes into that, the amount of hours that go into that. And like I say, balancing everything out with your day-to-day lifestyle as well as that performance lifestyle as well.
How do you make sure the athletes are able to work around the deadlines and sporting event? If they have an international sporting event, how are they then able to focus on their studies, and how are they actually able to work around these deadlines?
The way it should work, to give a bit of a brief outline, is once we've selected an athlete for our program, it's marked on their student records. That is then available readily to the departments. And in the instance that an athlete needs an extension on a deadline or more flexibility around their timetable, it makes that conversation easier because the department can see, yes, you're an elite athlete, and therefore they will adhere to the academic flexibility policies that we have in place for our elite athletes at the university. So it's better understood, and I think this year it's going to be a lot better administered just from, again, better understanding and going back to communication earlier on, making that as clear as possible for everyone will really help us make sure that it's administered properly.
You talked about earlier about the physical support they get. Is there also a mental support within the program? Because obviously when someone's maybe joining the program and they're moving away from somewhere far away, it can maybe affect them, and it might affect their performance. It could affect their even study. It could affect both sides of the studies and their performance. I've seen here that according to the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, the factors that contribute to students having poor mental health include a move away from home, academic and financial. I know with the financial situations with this program, it's they get free facilities and they can get their funds paid for, can't they? Expenses paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And also the absence of familiar social and emotional support. So is there anything in place to help the athletes with that?
So we have started signposting more to our university-wide institutional services. Basically, for any needs that a typical student would have, they're also available to our athletes. And again, that's something that we make readily known, if you like, through things like the handbook, as mentioned earlier. The lifestyle support, I would say, is the main support mechanism that we offer internally to try and to support athletes again through those transitions, through changes in what's going on around their sport. It really helps to identify those challenges that students are having or our student athletes are having, as well as finding mechanisms to better cope with that. The psychological support that we offer is probably more geared around preparing for sporting activity. I'd say the lifestyle is more the outside factors of sport, but then how that can then affect and feed into the rest of our multidisciplinary team. It might be something as little as an athlete is experiencing disrupted sleep. If that's identified through our lifestyle support service and notified to the rest of the team, as an example, our strength and conditioning coaches can take that into account as, okay, well, this athlete might need that little bit more of a lighter session if they're struggling to get the hours of sleep that they need. And again, just that rounded support in itself hopefully goes some way to supporting our athletes, particularly with their mental health and the load that they'll have on them from outside of sporting engagement, I guess.
More specific towards the program now rather than the athlete, is there anything you can think of that the program can do in the future to kind of grow?
Yeah, so something we're currently exploring is workshop delivery. So whereas a lot of our engagements are one-to-one with our athletes currently, we're looking to introduce workshops within nutrition, lifestyle, psychology. Also UK anti-doping, we're partnered through a university hub partnership, and essentially that means that we have an obligation to inform our athletes of clean sport awareness and making sure that they're adhering to the codes of practice as set by UCAD and the World Anti-Doping Association. So there's a lot of work for us to do in that space to make sure that we're informing our performance athletes. We're moving towards a more focused teams model as well within strength and conditioning. So that will mean that we're identifying clubs this year who need that little bit more additional support. That set of workshops can then be widened out to a larger group of students, I guess. So not enrolled in our performance athlete support program, but very much in need of the same information that we can offer. So basically trying to get as much bang for our buck, if you like, from the workshops that we're looking to deliver. Again, some exciting changes, particularly within the strength and conditioning space, and just making sure that we've got appropriate testing facilities as well as apparatus in place for improving preparation for sporting activity.
And to speak about the S&C within the programme, we've got Kieran on the show as well to talk about the specifics within S&C within the PASS programme. We kind of spoke to James, who gave an insight into preparing an athlete as a manager of the programme, but I just wanted to know a bit about what your role was about within the programme.
Cool. So my overarching role at Hallam is strength and conditioning coordinator. So through the sport department that we have, which is separate to like the academic side of sport, we're pretty fortunate to be in a position where we can actually deliver S&C support to our students. So basically everything S&C related through sport department is myself to coordinate with a small team and quite a large internship, which is a big part of it. But then in terms of the PASS program or PASS band TAS, which James may have spoken about too, the S&C, like I'll organize with the assistance of another coach how we run that. And then my personal coaching that I do is all via TAS athletes.
Moving on to kind of like the methods and the techniques within the strength and conditioning kind of lifestyle, what type of services do you provide on the PASS program?
First of all, we'll do like a needs analysis on everybody. So we actually map out who needs S&C support. It is, thankfully, S&C is becoming a bit more prominent now. So a lot of the athletes that we will have on the program, they already have S&C support elsewhere. For example, if they're part of an NGB somewhere or they're part of like a professional club, then they should be getting S&C support through that avenue. So what we do is it's basically like a mop-up. So everybody who still hasn't got that support, we can then identify that they could do with that support. And from that point, we will bring them in for a physio and strength and conditioning screening. So they're done together. We work alongside the physios to do that. That is basically like a baseline testing day, if you want to call it that. We screen their movement competency, some of their jump ability for their power, some strength stuff through some isometrics, really basic stuff. And it just gives us a really good idea then of what that individual actually needs, what we can help them work on, obviously according to what their sport requires. And then from that point, we get them in, we do some more planning, some annual planning, look at their goals. We can work with lifestyle for that as well. Their goals, a lot of the time it's sport goals. I want to win this. I want to reach this tournament, etc. And then we look at the more physical goals. I want to be able to shoot the ball X, Y speed, for example. I want to be able to jump higher, run faster, things like that. So yeah, we'll sit down, go over the planning element side of it, and then build a bespoke program for that individual.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I'm guessing a large part of it these days is kind of to do with technology and reaching them performance levels that the athletes want.
There is a lot of technology out now that it can be really useful. It can also be a bit of a trap. So there's a lot of gimmicks out there now. I'm sure you've probably seen plenty of them. With the prominence of social media, it's very easy to see a piece of technology and saying that's the game changer. That's what's going to take me to the next level. When in reality, it's just consistency is going to get you to the next level. Doing the basics right. I mean, that's kind of my philosophy in a way. Do the basics right, be consistent with it. And then we use technology where it's appropriate, which we definitely do use it. We're really fortunate to have some really good technology down in our suite. So we've got our force plates that we've recently been able to get this year, which they are a game changer, to be fair, with especially with the screening and the testing. We've got our velocity-based training technology, all sorts of stuff. Like, they are great when they're used in the right way. But again, it's doing the basics that's actually going to help the most.
Yeah, so the next question I was actually going to ask is, how do you assess an athlete's current fitness level and determine their like training needs? But I guess you kind of sort of answered that in a way of kind of just need to be consistent, really.
Yeah, so in terms of actually like assessing what they need, it comes back to that screening. So they go in for the physio screening first. That needs to be done to basically highlight, okay, is there any actual red flags, or have they got any injuries or niggles that are going to stop us being able to safely do things with them? Once they've done that, we sit in on that as well, just so that we're actually there present, learning about them and also working with the physio. Then they come into the suite with us and we'll do different, like, for example, we'll look at differences on left leg, right leg, different sides of the body, see if there's any like major concern in imbalances. Always is. It's sport. Sport is very rarely symmetrical, but we're looking for things that actually might be a bit of a red or amber flag. And then we can come back to that in the future if they are injured as like a baseline, or we can use it for our programming.
How important is it that you have the utmost, like, well, the best quality facilities and things like that? Because I know, well, I'm not familiar with a lot of the athletes, but I know one of them, obviously, well, Jade O'Dowda, she went to the Olympics. We spoke about it with Jane a little bit. How important is it to have the best quality facilities and equipment?
When it comes down to individual athletes that we coach, we have got a really good space. We are lacking some equipment that would, to be honest, help quite a lot, because our facility is built for like large groups. So we deliver S&C to teams. So for example, I've had 40 of the American football lads in at one time, and it's chaos, but we're lucky enough to have the space to do that. So it's kind of finding the balance of, we have facilities for big groups and it works well for those, but then also we do a lot of individual coaching down there, and have we got what we need? And then the other whole avenue of that is when you're working in para sport. So a lot of my coaching is para sport. And that is where way more barriers than able-bodied athletes. So what facilities have we got that actually allows us to support those?
What I wanted to talk about within this podcast, I've talked about it quite a lot of times, is kind of like the mental challenges. And one of the things, obviously, that comes up, you kind of just spoke about, is obviously injury. So injuries obviously can be very mentally challenging for athletes. How do you like incorporate the injury prevention techniques? I know it can be context to kind of what type of injury, but kind of in general.
When, so for example, if someone's injured, first point of call, what we should be able to do is go back and look at that baseline data, which is why that initial screening is so important to do. Something we're doing this year as well, hopefully, is a SCAT or SCOAT 6 test for everyone is basically concussion baseline screening. Because the last thing we want is if someone does unfortunately get a concussion, we don't want to be kind of in the dark of how do we know when they're ready. So yeah, that baseline screening is so important. Same things with if we're looking at like bilateral and unilateral work on the force plates, for example, we can actually get some really good data that when they're injured and we're returning to practice and returning to play, we know what that baseline is. But yeah, outside of that, it is very dependent in terms of what we actually do with them. It's very dependent on the athlete. I like to be proactive, not reactive. So a lot of the programming that I do, for example, is what I like, what we call prehab work, robustness work, making sure that even if it is boring, and believe me, a lot of the work is can be very, very dull and repetitive, better to do that and be bored of doing it than get injured.
Also kind of like preventing the injury.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So you're looking at the common injury sites or like the mechanisms of that sport that they're in and being proactive in, well, for example, if you're a swimmer, for example, there's so much force and just volume going through your shoulder, it's quite common for them to have like slap tears. Part of the job of an SC coach is to reduce that risk. So looking at what we can do before that is the case to make sure that the likelihood is reduced.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a good technique to do. So they're less likely to get injured for sure. Is there any psychological strategies into the PASP program? Just because I know I can't imagine like how busy their schedules are. Speaking to James about how busy their schedule can be with balancing studies with athletic performances.
From my experience, like trying to encourage some people as an SSE coach, we will see, right, that maybe something's up, something's going on. We spend a lot of time with them, we get to know people. So we might signpost them to psychology. And to be honest, a lot of the time it's nerves to go around to, like, people don't want to sit down usually with someone and kind of talk to them with their heart on their sleeve. But again, from my experience, those who actually do take that step and do it, they come back to me and say, thanks for not making me do it, but encouraging me to do it because it's helped them so, so much. Because at the end of the day, like being a student athlete, there's so much that goes into it that I think sometimes people don't realize. I mean, I went to uni at Hallam. I remember walking around looking at people with performance athlete on their back when I wasn't anything to do with the program. And you don't really think like, oh yeah, that's cool. They get some free kit. They get extra extended deadlines on their unis. Must be nice. But actually they need those deadline extensions because they've got so much to juggle. And then in terms of injuries, like the psychological element there, it is very individual to that person. You can have some people who they'll go very internal into the head. They'll kind of, everything will be a disaster to them, which is understandable. Then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum where an injury is understood as an opportunity to make sure that you come back stronger. You can work on things with the time you now have that you couldn't before. And it's very much like end goal orientated. So it's quite different for each individual.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of moving on to talking kind of about their lifestyle and how it is kind of different. And do you think the stress from the studies ever affected someone's performance? I think, especially at the top level, you've seen in the Olympics recently, people are losing out by 0.01, and it's like they're gutted afterwards, and that's kind of the difference. So do you think the stress from the studies has ever affected someone's performance?
Yeah, massively. So not even at the top, like the more recreational student athletes, if you want to call them that, we will be proactive even in the team delivery. Like we know when the exam and assignment periods are, and we'll adjust what we do during those times just so that, like, we look at stress not just as a mental thing, but it's a global, stress is global for that person. So if they're stressing out through their exam periods, it's going to affect what they can do playing their sport. It's going to affect their energy levels, their moods, like everything. And I think we need to look at that holistically. And that's just your kind of like your bog standard student athlete that is here just to enjoy sport. So then when you're looking at your high level athletes, people who are gunning to get to the Olympics, but then they're also trying to get a good grade at uni, because I mean, you're going to want to, or you're going to need to potentially look at how many people get injured. Unfortunately, their sporting career is over. What do they do then? So there's so much pressure on them to succeed in both of them areas. So yeah, it does, like, it has a massive effect on them. Again, they're lucky at Hallam, or if they're on TAS, that we have a lifestyle practitioner here. So that's whose basic job it is to really sit down with them and sort of plan what they can do, be proactive again, look at every other element of their life outside of sport and try and help them balance those two things.
Yeah, if they're ever struggling in whatever way, would you ever change up the training techniques, or is it more just how can we offer them support and then we kind of keep doing what we're doing to try and push them to achieve their goals?
Yeah, absolutely. So some other, like GB Climber that I work with, for example, they're not actually a Hallam student yet, but they're currently going through GCSEs, but then also traveling internationally for climbing competitions. So that's like a big time of their life where they've got that pressure to get through their GCSEs, but they're also trying to get medals out in different countries. Like, it's pretty crazy at that age, especially. But that's where I'll just sit down with them and figure out a plan to where, okay, at this point, I don't need them to get stronger by a percent or get faster or whatever. I need them to stay as close to baseline as possible to maintain what I know they can do without basically going down a rabbit hole with stress from their exams. So for example, if they're in with me 3 times a week, or they got 3 S&C sessions, can we alter that so that they can do what we need them to do in 2, and it gives them an extra hour in the week? Or can we reduce those sessions in a way that cuts the time that it takes in half, but it still maintains the qualities that they've got? So again, they can kind of in and out, like, do the session and crack on with the other stuff that they need, just to alleviate that pressure a little bit.
Have you ever had a personal experience of, could you maybe like describe a time when you've had to deal with an unmotivated athlete, or after a bad result or a bad grade? Or is that again more of a, give it kind of the psychologist type thing?
No, we see it. We definitely see it. So like you see it quite commonly around the exam period at uni or assignment period. It's motivation's a big one. I don't want to go into the gym and do that because I'm stressed about my studies. And then it's, well, actually, maybe it can help if you do come in, even if it's for half an hour, do your exercise in the morning. It'll get you up. It'll get you going with your day. You've ticked off your training, the kind of positive mental effects that physical activity have as well. Like, we'll try to work with them. But it's very common that people, the first thing that tends to go is the gym stuff. Less so in your elite athletes, because they often understand the impact that will have and the importance of it. But that's pretty common. Another like situation we've had is a bit of a vicious cycle, and it's, right, I'm really stressed with my uni work, so to de-stress, I'm going to go to the gym. But now I've spent 2 hours in the gym because I'm stressed, and now I've come out of the gym, I've just lost 2 hours. Now I'm more stressed about my uni work.
Yeah.
So they get up and stay and do it again. And it's just like this vicious cycle. So sometimes it goes the opposite way of not trying to get them in for half an hour. It's get out of the gym, come in, do what you need to do, and get out and kind of sit down and work and get through your assignments.
Yeah, I think one way to potentially counter that was, I spoke to James a bit, but about it, the kind of like the social support. Do that elite athletes, so do they all kind of like work together, and do they go in the gym together? Like, when you do these sessions, S&C sessions on the PSAP program, do they work together a lot? Are they together a lot, or is it kind of individual?
It depends on the athlete. I encourage them to. So, for example, I'll have individual athletes on their own programs in completely different sports, but in the session, because you're right, like, that social aspect is great for a lot of them. So for example, via TAS, I've had in a session a 20-year-old GB boxer, able-bodied, with a visually impaired 30-year-old goalball player, so Paralympic sport, and then a 48-year-old para-triathlon athlete. Completely different individuals from different backgrounds, like, but you get them in and it's great. Like, they've got that really good sort of community feel to the sessions. And it's, all right, you're a completely different person doing a different sport with a different background, but we're all here with the same goal.
Yeah.
At the end of it. And I think that's really important. It's something that I am pushing to be basically done more via PASP this year. So it's been quite individual this year with the PASP coaching.
Oh, okay.
Which is great because they get one-to-one support, right? But sometimes it can be a bit mundane then. In the past, when I was doing more PASP coaching, we'd have like a female PASP session and the male PASP session and the mixed PASP session. And then that was quite good. Like the female session especially, there was, I think, an average of 8 of the athletes would come in for, let's say, the Friday session, and there were 6 different sports between them. And at first, it was a bit like, all right, we're trying to juggle 8 different programs, people who don't really know each other, and sometimes it can be a bit awkward, and you're like, you know, trying to get blood out of a stone, get them to talking to each other. But in 2 months' time, you can't shut them up because they're just like this own little community in themselves. Yeah.
They can also like, I guess they can also like push each other as well to the level as well. And I think as well, that age group as well, like when people are first moving away and kind of doing this, they're kind of, they maybe don't have that social support. They maybe might be a bit more alone, kind of spoke about with James a little bit. So I think having the group sessions sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, massively. Same with like the inductions onto PASP. We want to get everyone together in the same room so that they can look around and be like, right, I'm in a new city, doing like a whole new chapter of my life in a new situation, and I'm looking at 35 other people who are in the same boat, and it just like, it can help make them feel like, one, they're part of something, but two, they're not alone.
You kind of did kind of speak about it a little bit, but I was going to kind of move on to what you think the future of S&C on the program, more from like a mental perspective. So you kind of talked about the groups. Is there anything else that you'd maybe add to improve it or just improve the program in general?
Year on year, things are so like different all the time, and some things get better, some things get dropped. So there's always going to be room for improvement there. But yeah, from S&C standpoint, definitely. I would like group training, testing as well as a big one, that big support group that you have when you're testing, everyone getting behind each other. But also still remembering that some people don't like that. Some people want to come in on their own and just crack on, and that's fine as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of a good point, actually. It's kind of like their personal needs, if anything else. Well, I think that's everything. Brilliant. Well, thanks for giving me your time, Kieran. That was really interesting to hear about the S&C and the kind of the needs and the PASP program. I hope to see some of your athletes on the big times, on the big time stages, hopefully the Olympics or professional football or whatever. I hope to see it. That's all we have time for from the PSAP team at Hallam on the preparation of talent behind the talent. Thanks for watching Sport Within the Mind podcast. On the next episode, we introduce a sports psychologist's research of how physical activity can affect a person's mental health. But until then, it's bye for now.